So we're holding Shmuel Beis. We had seen Shaul's passing, we had seen the eulogy that David gave for Shaul, and we were holding with the first battle between Avner Ben-Ner and Yoav, and we had seen how Yoav's brother Asael had given chase after Avner, and Avner begged him to chase someone else, and Asael wouldn't let up. Until finally, Avner stuck back the back of his spear and killed Asael with one blow. And then we had seen the war come to an end, at least that battle came to an end. And we said that as time progressed, the Navi doesn't record every battle, but the Navi records in general that David was getting stronger as time progressed. And as the war progressed, Shaul's camp got weaker and weaker, even though it would seem that logic would dictate the reverse. Shaul had all of Israel on his side, David only had the tribe of Yehuda. The Navi now records a story which is unclear exactly what happened. We know that a king, when he has a wife or a concubine, so no one else may marry her other than another king. And the chief general, Avner Ben-Ner, who was Shaul's chief general, and then he's the one that really appointed Shaul's son, Ish-Bosheth, as king, and he was the one who was supportive of Ish-Bosheth. He comes to Avner and he says, "Why did you take my father's Pilegesh as a wife?" And the problem is that the Navi doesn't tell us whether Avner did or did not take her. The Navi begins the story with Ish-Bosheth's claim and Avner's answer, and nowhere does the Navi tell us who was right. The Navi doesn't tell us what really happened. The Navi just says that Ish-Bosheth asked Avner, how could you take my father's Pilegesh? And Avner got very upset, and he said, "This is how you talk to me, you disgrace me, I've done everything for you, now I'm going to go and help King David." And he switches sides, and he starts convincing all the elders. So he tells them, "Until now, who is our greatest warrior? We know that God promised David to lead the Jewish people. He's the one that we should all be under. He was always our chief general. Now that Shaul died, it's only logical he should take the throne." This story deserves a class in and unto itself. What went on here? We're talking about big tzaddikim, Ish-Bosheth, Avner. What are the claims? What really happened? And there are different understandings as to what really happened. But for now, we'll leave the questions open, and we'll just remember that maybe at some maybe Thursday night we'll go more in depth into what really happened here. So Avner sends word to David, and he says, "Why not have you king over all of the Jewish people? I want to switch sides to you. Let's make a treaty. I'll bring the Jewish people. I'll convince everyone to come under your reign." And David says, "Fine, I want one thing from you. I don't want to see you before you bring me my wife Michal." If you recall, when David began his career, Shaul had said that whoever could bring him 100 foreskins, he will give him great wealth, and his daughter Michal. And David had come forth with 200 foreskins before the due date, and he brought them on platters, and he wanted Michal, and he was given Michal. And after the relationship between David and Shaul deteriorated, so Shaul said, being that I owed him a lot of money and he gave me something that had almost no value, these foreskins, when he meant to engage my daughter, he meant to engage her with all that money that I owed him. Because we discussed this, if someone has a loan that the other person owes him for millions of dollars, and he's giving the other person a toy ring that's worth $2, $1. Obviously, what's his intent? What does he mean to engage the woman? So Shaul held that David, for sure, his intent was over the millions of dollars that he was owed, and he intended to engage his daughter with that. And an engagement, even with millions of dollars, if it's on a loan, then the engagement is not valid. And David said, "No, that's not what I had in mind. I had in mind to engage her with all those foreskins. They do have some value. You could do something with them. You could use them as animal feed, you could use them as a trophy, whatever you want. Bottom line, they have some value. I meant to engage her with that. And legally, she's engaged, because legally a girl could get engaged with anything that's worth a pruto, which is about 5 cents, 10 cents, somewhere around there." So David held she was his wife legally, and Shaul held she wasn't, and that's why Shaul took her and gave her to Palti ben Laish to live with. Palti ben Laish never lay a finger on her. He was a big tzaddik. He put a sword in between the two beds, and he said, if one of us comes near the other, then the sword is going to take care of them. He's going to get killed. We're not doing anything. And all these years, David is living without his wife. So now that Avner is offering him to take the throne, David says, fine. Don't forget, David was already anointed by the tribe of Yehuda, and he was winning the wars. So David says, fine, you want to help me regain the throne over, not regain, but you want to help me gain the throne over all of the Jewish people, first give me back my wife. Rav Aviner quotes this. He says that this shows us that the perspective that David had with regard to his home and his duties to the Jewish people. Here he is, the greatest civil war is about to end. The general of the other side is saying, I'll give you your wife, I'll give you the people, and we could have peace. And David is saying, yeah, that's important. First, my wife. First, my wife first. We see that he was willing to forego everything Amner had to offer for the sake of getting his wife back, which is supposed to give us perspective on what our duties are with regard to the people. And Rav Aviner develops this thought. He says that the idea is that David knew that all his services to the Jewish people were built on the home. The home is what gives. It's not an individual. An individual is representing the home. We don't find that his wives were so active in politics. We don't find that they were active in almost anything. They were active in bringing children and raising the children. But David knew that in order to be successful, he needs to have his home. And this is something to remember in general. A person has to stand on his own 2 feet before he can build a home. A person has to have a home before he can build the Jewish people. So the Chassidish Rebbe who said that when he started out life, his goal was to fix the world. And as he matured, he realized that the world is a bit big on him, so he decided he has to fix the country. And as he matured, he realized that the country is a bit big on him, so he said he has to fix the city. And then he grew a little bit older, and he said, okay, I can't fix the whole city, I have to fix the town. And then he grew some more, and he said, I can't fix the town, I'll at least fix my family. And when he finally reached the ripe old age, he came to the conclusion, even that very big, I have to focus on fixing myself. And the truth is that in order for us to have an impact on our family, as we saw last week in the Binyan HaBayit, we have to first fix ourselves. Our families know who we are, and they know our faults, and if we want someone to listen to us, so they have to look at us and feel like we're someone worth listening to. And only after we've ensured that we're good people can we try and build a home that's good, and only after we've built a home that's good can we try and build things out of the home. So David knows that his job as king, on the one hand that's his job, but on the other hand, in order for him to be successful at it, he needs to have his home. And so he demands, first bring me back my wife. If we want to view it from a more political viewpoint, so we could say Shaul's daughter, if they give him Shaul's daughter, that's the greatest show of strength. After all, Shaul was the previous king. And part of what happened when Shaul claimed David was rebelling is that he took his wife away and gave her to someone else. If there's one act that's going to show that David has full right to the throne and he wasn't rebellious and he is a proper person, it's the giving back of this girl. So if we want to look at it politically, this was a good political move as well.
Who's so, in charge right now?
The one who's heading Shaul's camp is Shaul's son Ish-Boshet, who is a very big tzaddik, and the chief general Avner Ben-Ner is switching sides from Ish-Boshet to David. Avner was the chief general. So not only that, David sends word to Ish-Boshet, her brother, and he says, send me your sister back, I want my wife Michal, because when I engaged her I had in mind I'm engaging her with those foreskins. And Ish-Boshet is such a pious person that he agrees. This is his enemy, this is the man on the other side, on enemy lines, he's the head of the enemy, And Ishbosheth sends his brother-in-law, his sister, he sends him Michal. And as she leaves, Palti ben Lais, that great tzaddik who was with her in the same house, no one knew what was going on, and he didn't touch her, he followed her and was going and crying. And Avner told him, go back, it's over. Why was he crying? He said, so many days, weeks, months, years, I've had this great mitzvah. Every day and every night I had temptation, and I stood up to the temptation. And now that the test is over, and I've stood up to the test every day of the year, now I'm crying. That's it. I lost it. Now life is going to be very ordinary. I don't have that mitzvah. Amner comes to David, and when he's coming, he's already spoken to the elders of the Jewish people, and he's even convinced the elders of the tribe of Benjamin, who should be most loyal to Ishbosheth, that they should go to David's side. And David welcomes Avner, he makes a feast for him and his men, and Avner tells David, let me go and gather for my master the king, the people will make a treaty with you and anoint you as king over everyone. And David sends him in peace. Now, as this whole story has been transpiring, David's chief general, his nephew, the son of Tzruiah, his sister, Yoav, has been out at battle. And Yoav comes back, he has a lot of loot, him and his men, and he hears that things have been happening when he was gone. The king has met with the chief general of the opposite side, and they've made a treaty. And Yoav rushes into David and he tells him, what'd you do? Avner came here and you let him go. Let's remember, what's the backdrop to the scene? Avner has murdered Yoav's brother. Yoav wants Avner dead. The last thing Yoav wants to see is a peace treaty between David and Avner. Yoav has been tremendously successful in his wars against Avner. He's on the verge of winning. And now, David is making a treaty with Avner. Yoav tells David, he tells him, you know Avner, he came to seduce you. He wants to know exactly where you're located, what are the best ways to attack the city. He wants to know what's going on in our camp. How'd you do such a thing? Let him go free. And Yoav walks out, and he sends messengers, and he calls Avner back. And the pasuk says that Avner was brought back from a place called Bo Hasira, the pit of the thorns. And in a few minutes we'll return to this point. And David doesn't know what Avner is doing, what Yoav is doing. So Avner comes back, Avner has been faithful, and Yoav calls him into the gate, and he talks to him, and as they're talking, he pulls out his sword and kills him. Avner is dead. The potential for unifying the Jewish people is on the brink. Avner has just been murdered. Our sages say that when Yoav took Avner into the gate, it means he took him into the court. He took him into the Sanhedrin. The gate in Hebrew always refers to the court. And he brought him before the court and he said, you murdered my brother. And Avner said, your brother was trying to kill me. And Yoav said, well, if he was a rodef, if he was chasing after you to kill you, so you could have hurt him. Now, Allah says, if a Jew is chasing another Jew to kill him, so he may save his life by killing another guy. Someone's trying to kill a Jew, so the Jew is allowed to kill that other person to save his own life. But if he could maim him, if he could harm him, then he shouldn't kill him. He should do something else. Hit him in the leg. Shoot him in the leg. Do something else. So Yoav tells Avner, why'd you kill him? And Avner says, well, what do you mean? He was chasing me. I couldn't aim that well. And Yoav says, that's no excuse. If you could aim so well that you hit him under the fifth rib, and with one shot you detached his gallbladder and liver and killed him with one shot, then you could aim very well. That's no excuse. If you could aim well enough to kill him with one shot, you could have aimed well enough to maim him. You had no right to kill him. And the court agreed with Yoav. And according to this understanding, when Yoav put Avner to death, it was at the hands of the court. Even though David won't agree with it. In a few minutes we'll see David will be very upset at what happened here. There's another understanding here among our sages. Our sages say that he was called back from the pit of the thorn. Our sages say the reason Avner was deserving of death was because of the pit and the thorn. When the pit refers to the flask of water, you recall when Saul was chasing David, So at one point Shaul went into a cave to go to the bathroom, and David and his men were hiding in the back of the cave. And David snuck up with some of his soldiers, and they said, "Let's kill him now." And David said, "No, how could we kill him? He's the anointed one." And David cut off the corner of his coat. And then Shaul went out of the cave, and David walked out and said, "Don't you see? I could have killed you. Here's the corner of your coat. Just like I cut that, I could have cut you, and I didn't. Don't you see? I don't want to make war with you." Short while thereafter, Shaul again gives chase after David. Why does he give chase? Our sages say that Abner had messed up. He had let the king enter a cave where he almost got killed. So Abner told Shaul, he said, "Who says that really David got that close to you? I'm telling you, it must be that you were traveling and David was hiding and your coat got torn on a thorn and a piece got torn off and David took it from there. Who says that David really could have killed you?" And when Shaul heard this, Shaul said, "Okay." So Shaul gave chase again after David. So then the next time, Shaul is lying in the middle of the camp, everyone surrounding Shaul, and David sneaks up with his men, and they grab the flask and the spear from near Shaul's head, and then he calls out and he says, "Abner, what are you going to answer now? Don't you see I have the flask? How do I get the flask and the spear?" And again, David seems to have convinced Shaul that he could have killed him and he didn't, and logic would dictate that Shaul would stop giving chase, and yet we find that David has to run. He leaves the land of Israel, he goes to Philistine territory after the story. What happened? Our sages say Abner again was caught not doing his duty properly. The enemy managed to enter their camp and almost kill the king. So Abner said, "Who says he entered our camp? You think he could have entered and we would have all been sleeping? Must be one of the men is on his side. One of the men went in when you were sleeping and took the flask and took the spear and gave it to David. Can't be that he made it into our camp and you were in danger. No such thing." So for those two claims, that's referred to as the pit and the thorn, Abner was called back in heaven, and that's why Abner, as far as heavens were concerned, Abner was deserving to be put to death, because he kept Shaul going against David. Now, this is going to be a mark on Yoav's record till the end of Yoav's life. And our sages say that how was Yoav able to overtake Abner? So according to the understanding, it was before the court. That's understandable. But there's another understanding. Our sages say that when Abner walked back, so Yoav said, "I have a lucky question, Abner." Yoav says, Abner says, "Yeah, what's the question?" He says, "If you have a woman who has no hands, and she's married to a man and they have no children, and then that man passes away, so her brother is supposed to marry her. That's called Yibum. And if her brother-in-law, the brother of the man who died away, is supposed to marry her. That's called Yibum. And if that man does not want to marry her, then there's a procedure whereby she takes off his sandal and she spits in front of him. Tell me, Abner, a woman who has no hands, how could she take off his sandal and spit in front of him? How does she do that procedure?" So Abner says, "Sure, I'll show you." He puts his hands behind his back, and he leans forward with his mouth to show him how he takes it off with his mouth. And as he's leaning forward to take the sandal off with his teeth, Yoav takes advantage, pulls out the sword, and kills him. So that's another tradition that we have as to how Yoav killed Abner. Now, in a week or two, we are going to encounter a very difficult story about David and Bathsheba. David wants to marry a young girl. She's married to a man named Uriah Achiti. Uriah Achiti is in the front lines and he's given her a get. He's divorced her on condition, "If I don't make it back alive, you should be divorced." And David takes the girl, and then she becomes pregnant, and David sends word, "Bring back Uriah." And Uriah comes back and David tells him, "Go home, be with your wife." And Uriah refuses. And in refusing, Uriah basically rebels against the king. He says, "I know you told me to do something, but everyone's out at war. I can't go be with my wife." And David sends a letter to Yoav and he tells him, "Have Uriah killed." And Yoav then takes Uriah together with a group of men and he sends them to enemy lines, to an area where they will for sure die. And so Uriah dies and many of the soldiers die. And our sages say, we're going to see at the end of David's life, David takes Yoav to task. David takes him to task for a few things. One is going to be for killing Abner. But when David takes Yoav to task for killing Abner, David says, "You should know, Yoav, Abner is a better man than you are." Because when Abner was under King Saul, so King Saul felt that the people of note, all the Kohanim were rebelling against him. So King Saul told Avner, go kill the men of Nob. Go kill out the city of Nob. And Avner said, wait a second. When we agreed with Joshua to accept a king, so we told Joshua, you're our leader, and if anyone goes against your word, they'll get killed, but you be strong with the Torah. And we added the word but, ah. But you be strong with the Torah. The word ah, but, came to limit the strength of our king. When we told Joshua, our first leader after Moshe, we told Yoshua, anyone who rebels against what you say will get killed, but be strong with the Torah. We were telling him, on condition that what you say goes in line with the Torah. And you know what, Shaul? You have the right as a king to do what you think is right. But I think that by your telling me to kill out the city of Nob, that's against the Torah. And I'm not obligated to listen to you. So even though Shaul was standing there and telling his chief general, go kill out the city of Nob, his chief general said, well, from the verses it seems that you don't have a right to tell me to kill out the city of Nob. I don't have to listen to you when your commandment contradicts the Torah, even though you're my king. And Amner stood back and did not kill the city of Nob. When David sent a written letter to Yoav and said, have Uriah killed. And not only did Yoav bring Uriah to the front lines where he would certainly die, Yoav sent a group of men with Uriah, and those group of men also died. So David, in his last days, is going to tell Yoav, he's going to tell him, when you murdered Avner, you not only murdered a pious person that you had no right to murder, but you murdered a man who was better than you. Because when I sent you a letter and said, have Uriah killed, that was a letter, it was in writing. You didn't hear me tell it to you. And nonetheless, you listened. You had Uriah killed improperly. And Avner is a man who was standing in front of his king, and his king was yelling at him and telling him, go kill out the city of Nob. And he stood up to King Saul and he said, no, I won't. So you killed a man who was better than you. Not only a person who didn't deserve to be killed at your hand, but also he was better than you. Now David has a problem. David hears that Yoav killed Avner. And when David hears this, the first thing he says is, me and my kingdom are clean of the blood of Avner. I have nothing to do with it. And the blood of Avner should land on the head of Yoav and his family. And then he curses Yoav with five curses that his family should have a zav, a person who has a problem with their flow, should have mitzora, some kind of something like leper. They should be poor. They should fall at the sword, and they should lack bread. So David HaMelech curses Yoav with five curses. And at the end of Yoav's lifetime, when King Shlomo, Solomon, David's son, wants to put him to death, Yoav is going to say no, and he's going to run into the temple. And he's going to hold on to the altar and say, I'm not going. And King Solomon is going to send word, take him off the altar, he's going to be put to death. And Yoav says, no, you want to kill me here, I'm not going unless Shlomo accepts upon himself these curses. Yoav, to the end of his days, remembers these curses that David curses him. And Shlomo is going to say, okay, I accept the curses, and the curses will come true on David's own family, which is something to think about. In Judaism, we often find our sages teaching us that we should be careful not to curse someone, it might come back. The Gemara records that there was once an Amora who saw someone stealing from him, so he cursed him. So he said, you should be in cherem, you should be in halachic ostracism. So the man said, who, me? You should be in cherem. So the rabbi got scared, so he ran to the court and he said, who's right? He just put me in halachic ostracism. So they told him, you're wrong and he's right. So he said, why? He said, well, he stole from you. So he's a thief, he owes you money. What right do you have to put him in halachic ostracism? How could you put him in cherem? But the halacha says that if you put someone improperly in cherem, in halachic ostracism, then he may put you in cherem. So when he responded and said it should go on you too, he had a right to do that. Now you better find him and apologize. Sometimes it could be, but it's a problem. It's not so simple. So there was once a person who stood before someone else and he started cursing him. And he's cursing and cursing and he gets all excited and he curses more and more. And when he finishes, the guy says, and to you too. Sometimes that's very powerful. Our sages say that one rabbi once blessed another rabbi with longevity, an extra long life. And that rabbi, the blessing came true. So one day the two met. And the one who gave the blessing said, I see my blessing came true. So the other guy smiles and says, yeah. So he says, so why didn't you say you too? Why didn't you say give it back to me? Rabbi Avraham Shapiro always, when he gives blessings, he always ends the blessing and says, and now say in you too. He finishes the blessing and says, now say it back to me. So we have to be careful. Now David is giving a whole long list of curses to Yoav. And at the end of Yoav's life, Yoav is going to say, I'm not letting you, King Solomon, kill me unless you take him back and they should land on you and not on me. King Solomon will accept and they will land on David's family ultimately. David has to show the people that he had no hand in this. So David tears his clothing and he wears sackcloth and he starts eulogizing over Avner. And not only that, he calls over Yoav and he tells Yoav, tear your clothing. Now you're going to mourn over Avner. The man who killed him is commanded to mourn over his death. David tells him, you have to not only mourn over him, you have to eulogize over him. And King David leads the eulogy and the weeping over Avner. And everyone cries over Avner. And David starts wailing over Avner. He says, can it be that Avner dies like a derelict? His hands weren't bound, his feet weren't bound. How could it be that people who are sinful were able to overtake him and kill him? And everyone cries. Everyone's so convinced by David's eulogy that at the end of the eulogy there's a custom that we offer the person who's in mourning the first meal other people give him. That's called Seudat Avah. The first meal a person eats after burying a relative is supposed to be given by someone else. That's something for you guys to remember. You shouldn't need it, but because you guys are in Israel, and very often if relatives come to bury a relative in Israel, so there's no one else around to offer the meal. I've had the opportunity, unfortunately, many times to give people their first meal after burying their relative, because a lot of people come to Israel to bury their relative, and they have no one here to prepare that first meal. People don't always remember this. And the first meal is supposed to be with bagels or some round food.
Lentils.
Could be lentils if you guys are good at cooking. It should be satiating. So the nation comes to David HaMelech as though David is the one in mourning, and they offer him the first meal. And David takes a vow. He says, God forbid, till nightfall I'm not tasting anything. He takes on himself a fast. And when everyone sees that he goes so far, even after Avner is buried, he's fasting, he's not eating, finds favor in the eyes of the nation, and they all know that David wasn't behind this plot. It wasn't really a game that was going on here. David had nothing to do with it. And then David, inside his chambers, he tells his servants, he tells them, you should know that a great man fell of the Jewish people today. And today I'm fresh. I was just anointed as king, and my nephews, the sons of Tzruya, my sister, they're tougher than I am. May God pay back those who do bad as they do. Now Ishbosheth hears that Avner died, and he gets scared. There were two men from his own tribe, Rechav and Baana, two brothers, who were officers in his army. And they thought that they're going to be able to help David out, and they'd get reward for that. So it was sometime in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and he was laying down to rest. And there were people bringing in wheat into his house, and they snuck in among the people bringing in the wheat, and they killed him, again hitting him under the fifth rib, and they cut off his head, and they brought it all night long. They traveled, they brought his head to David. So now Ishbosheth is dead, huh? Ishbosheth, David's son. Avner, the chief general, is dead, and now Ishbosheth is dead. There's no king from Shaul's family. The only one left from Shaul's family is a grandson, a son of Yonasan, who was 5 years old, and he's a cripple, he can't walk. And his name is also Mephibosheth. So they bring the heads to David, and they say, here's the head of your enemy, Ishbosheth, the son of Shaul, your enemy, who wanted to have you dead, and God gave you revenge today from Shaul and his offspring. And David answers Rechav and Baana, these two generals. He tells them, I swear by God, the God who saved me from all times of need, the person who came to me and gave me the news that Shaul was dead, he thought that he was giving me good news. He thought I'd reward him. I swear I grabbed him and had him killed in Ziklag rather than give him reward. And now you murderous individuals, you killed the man who was whole. The person who told me of Shaul's death came upon Shaul when he was on the verge of dying anyway. All he did was bring me the news of Shaul's death, and Shaul really was deserving of death because Shaul had murdered the whole city of Nob. And nonetheless, when he came in and gave me this news, I had him killed. You too, you murdered a righteous person who wasn't on the verge of dying. Ishbosheth was just lying in his bed. You don't think I'm going to demand his blood from your hand? I will wipe you out of the land. And David has them killed, and then he takes their hands and feet and hangs them in the public pool in Hebron. And the idea was, these are the hands that carried Ishbosheth's head, and these are the feet that ran all night long to bring me this news. And the people heard this, and after David shows that even when his enemies are avenged, he's a righteous person, the Jewish people unite, and they want to appoint David as king. And the tribe send messengers to David to Hebron, and they tell him, you led us until now, we want you to lead us, we want you to be king. And this is where we're going to pick up next week, where David is anointed as king over all of the Jewish people. Notice that his anointment takes place in Hebron. We mentioned before that Hebron is going to be a source of light for the Jewish people, and especially for David's kingdom. And here we see another example of that, that David's kingdom begins in Hebron. He had ruled in Hebron for 7 years and a half, and now his kingdom over all of the Jewish people is established in Hebron.